Real people,
real celebrities,
real talk.
Join the Breakfast Club.
Blast off in your
weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We have some special guests with us this morning. The family of Eric Garner. His wife, Esau Garner. Did I say your name right?
Yes, you did.
Daughter, Emerald Garner.
Good morning.
And yep. Reverend Al Sharpton.
Reverend Al Sharpton. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, first of all, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
First, we want to send our condolences and that we're so sorry
Absolutely.
For your family.
Absolutely.
Now, let's take it back a little bit. Let's start from the day that everything happened. What actually happened? We heard so much from the news, from media, from newspapers. We never really...
We saw the video.
We know what happened.
Okay, well, that morning, he had sinuses and stuff, so he was sneezing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, babe, why don't you stay in the house? And he said, oh, I can't make no money in the house, babe. I'm going out. So I said, okay. So he dropped me off where I was going, and he looked back at me and he said, babe, give me a kiss. Like, I've been married to him for 28 years. He never asked me for a kiss, like, mm-hmm. Like that. So he's like, why are you looking at me like that? I said, because you ain't never asked me for a kiss before. So I gave him a kiss. He said, you cooking? I said, yeah, I'm cooking, fat boy. That was my little nickname for him.
Fat boy.
Yes. And he said, what you cooking? I said, pork chops and rice and beans. He said, sound good. I said, anything's good to you. So then he looked, I said, all right, love you, see you later, be careful. And he looked back, he said, right back at you. And he drove off.
Mm.
I went to my appointment or whatever. I got home. It was approximately about 5 minutes to three. No, about 2:45. He usually texts me every couple of hours to let me know that he was okay,
right.
Everything was good, if he was coming in early or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he texts me and he's like, I'm okay. So I'm like, okay. I go watch TV, whatever. My son gets up. And he comes in the room and he says, Ma, you still gonna give me $20 I asked you for yesterday? I'm like, yeah, boy, just give me my purse. So he hands me my purse. He goes outside. I lived on the first floor. So he immediately comes back in the house and he's like, Ma, I think you should call Daddy. And I said, for what? I'm like, he'd be home in a couple of hours. I'm not gonna bother him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, somebody just said they choked him, that Daddy got choked out on Bay Street.
Mm.
So me, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, he got arrested again. Let me just go sit outside, keep my phone on. So he's going to call me, bail right. him out, whatever the case may be. I get on the front bench, and now my phone is ringing, and it's ringing numbers that I've never seen before.
Right.
So I'm like, hello? They like, Pinky, you need to get down here quick. Your husband's not breathing. So I'm like, what? They're like, he's not breathing. They're trying to revive him. They're working on him or whatever. So I'm like, okay. So I call a cab. By the time the cab got there, I got another phone call that said, go straight to the hospital because they just put him in the ambulance.
Mm.
So in my mind, I'm saying, okay, he probably had an asthma attack, so they're going to take him to the hospital. I shoot over to the hospital. But as I'm riding to the hospital, the tears start to flow because after you're married to somebody for so long, it's like a kindred
spirit.
Gotcha. So you know when something's wrong. And I said to my girlfriend, I said, he's no longer here with us. And she said, Pinky, don't say that. That's my nickname.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say that. Let's just wait till we get to the hospital. So when I get to the hospital, they lead me all the way around to this little room that just had a desk and a phone.
Mm.
And I said to her, I said, it's a wrap, just like that. And she said, don't say that. So now I'm asking questions like, where is he? What's right. going on? They're not telling me nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So now I get ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
I start kicking the door. I start banging. I start
right.
screaming.
As you should.
You right. know what I'm saying? Like, let me know something. You
right.
have me in limbo. I don't know if he's dead, alive. You working on him? What's going on? They're like, oh, somebody's going to talk to you in 5 minutes. That 5 minutes went on for 2 hours.
Sheesh.
I was sitting in that room. So I said to my girlfriend, I said, Linda, I'm going outside to smoke a cigarette, but I really wasn't. I was going outside to go around to the emergency exit and entrance and go in through that way since they wouldn't let me in through the two locked doors.
Right.
But as I'm walking that way, God must have been with somebody that day because Uncle Larry intervened and was like, where are you going? I said, Uncle Larry, I'm going to smoke a cigarette. They're not telling me nothing. I need to know something. We turned back around and walked back. By the time we got back to the double doors, I see all these doctors coming toward me. So I'm like, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. They come through the doors. They looked at me. They was like, oh, the family of Eric Garner. So I said, I'm right here. I'm his wife. And they just looked at me and said, oh, we did everything we could, but we couldn't save him. Basically, I kind of blacked from like that moment until I don't even know how I got home.
Right.
You know, they let me go in and see him for a few minutes. I remember that. And then when I left, I got home. And, you know, of course, I was distraught, and my son was playing basketball, and I saw one of his friends, and I said, could you do me a favor? Can you go up the block and tell my son I need him to come home, like, ASAP? Don't say anything, because by that time, everybody on the block knew.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to keep them from knowing before I could tell them.
Right.
So he finally comes down the block, and he's walking towards me, and I said, come here. I call him boy because he was the first boy after four girls.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, boy. And he said, yes, ma. And I said, your dad went to the hospital and he didn't make it. And he just, like, his whole aura just, he had just won the championship game at that, you know. So his whole aura just changed and he just went in the house. And I said, you all right? And he was like, yeah, but I knew he wasn't. And then I called the rest of my children and they all came out to Staten Island. And then we just, you know, we sat there and cried and everything for a few hours. And then I see breaking news splash across the screen. I didn't know they had a video at that time.
That was the first time you saw the video?
That was the first time I saw the video.
What were they telling you initially? How did they say he died initially before the video?
That he had a heart attack,
which
I knew was BS. And what was so crazy is that his intentions was to do this last run, and he was in the line for his SSI. So the next day he had a doctor's appointment to complete everything that you need to do to get, you know, SSI, you know, disability or whatever.
Right.
And it was just...
Was the video released that it wasn't until a couple of days later, or was it that same day?
It was the same day.
So you watching what happened? You saw the video pops up on TV.
I only saw up to like the second I can't breathe, and then my kids were like, "No, ma," because they had seen it,
right?
But they was like, "Ma, you don't need to see." I still haven't seen past the I can't breathe. I haven't seen, you know, anything after that. I just can't watch it. It's like, and then every time that something happens with the police, it's like they're using his video as an example, but you have no compassion that I'm actually watching my husband die over and over and over again. And it's just, it's heartbreaking. Like now, I'm at least able to speak about it without breaking down, because you know, I'm so tired of crying.
No, like, I understand.
Yeah,
but when it happens, it just seems like everything during that day and everything they did was wrong, from the choking to the paramedics to everything. It just seems like it just couldn't be right.
And the thing that's so crazy is that my husband was a peacemaker, and he was the type, you know how it was back in the day, yo. Don't make no noise on this corner, because you know you bringing attention to, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he was always breaking up the fights with the drunks and the homeless and stuff like that. And that day, he just broke up a fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't make a sale. They never saw any money being transferred. They never saw anything. They really had no probable cause to even say anything to him.
And it was cigarettes, they said, right?
Cigarettes.
Right.
Did you ever feel the need to speak out and tell people who the real Eric Garner was? Because, you know, they bring in his police record and say, oh, he got arrested this many times.
Yes, you know. I've done plenty of interviews, and I've told them all the same thing. He was a gentle giant, you know? He was a good guy. He didn't know any other way to take care of me and six children. You know, he needed more than minimum wage.
Right.
You know, because of the way he was raised. You know, his mom had a good job. They lived in a house. You know, he had a very privileged life, you know. And I guess he wanted the same for his children and knew that, you know, a regular job just wasn't going to do it.
And the police officers were familiar with him. I mean, it's the community.
Yes,
they didn't.
Yes.
They knew he wasn't a violent
person.
They
harassed us. We'd be going to the 99-cent store and they'd be, hey, cigarette guy, Or sometimes they would see me without him and say, hey, cigarette lady.
So they knew what it was. They knew it was about a cigarette.
Exactly,
it wasn't nothing
who
crazy.
Eric was.
It wasn't no need for them to jump out the window the way they did. They know,
none. Yeah. None whatsoever. Because as you know, he's been arrested a whole lot of times.
Right.
Never once for resisting arrest.
You know what? When it came out that you guys got a settlement, what bothered me so much, it was like they agreed to give you a settlement, but they still didn't prosecute any of the police officers.
Yet. That's why we had big march and rally.
Yes.
Because the federal government can prosecute. You got to remember, Envy, they acquitted the cops with Rodney King, and
right.
we got the federal government to come in. And those cops were convicted. Abner Louima, mm-hmm. the Justice Department, federal government came in. Those cops are still in jail. So, and I know Nash Action Network and I were involved in leading on both of them. So we never thought that the Staten Island grand jury was going to indict because a DA works with the cops.
Absolutely.
You've got to have an outside entity that does not have a conflict of interest to deal with that. So that's why we had the big march over the weekend, and that's why we are continuing. You know, the day this happened and the mother of Eric called us, at Nash Action Network. I was in Nevada doing the voter rights stuff. So when I got the call, Cynthia Davis, who heads our Staten Island office, I said, well, have Kirsten Foy or Kevin McCall, some of the young guys I have on staff that we're trying to, you know, push out there, let them handle it. She said, no, you need to see this video, Reverend. Mm-hmm. I said, y'all know how to do this. I'm in Nevada with the office here.
Right.
And when I saw the video, I took the red eye back mm-hmm. and helped them. Through the funeral and all that. In fact, Emerald works on staff now at National Action Network. Mm-hmm. Because what people don't realize, when a policeman has a question or issue, his union provides him with lawyers,
right.
funds, helps his kids if they need all of that. They have an institution. If you don't have an institution like National Action Network, what we do, mm-hmm. to fight an institution, what are they supposed to do on their own? How do they deal with legal and media right. and kids and all of that? So the media tries to demonize those of us in the movement mm-hmm. and praise the unions. We're the counterbalance to the unions,
yeah.
saying you want to fight, we're willing to fight, and we'll put our resources in. We don't want nothing out of a settlement or nothing because this is what we do. But for the law to not protect the civil rights, which is a federal issue of Eric Garner, is where we are now. So those police are not scot-free. Money is not justice. Money is just dealing with the loss. Justice is they need to have to be accountable for what they did.
I like what you Absolutely. Just said, too, Reverend. You said, because a lot of people do try to discredit you, and they, you know, they like to say you're an ambulance chasing you. You know, you're there for the money and things like that.
Well, first of all, they will tell you, we've given money, paid for the funeral. I don't want a dime back. Mm-hmm. Nash Ashton never doesn't get a dime back. And we're not ambulance chasers. We're the ambulance. They call us. I've mm-hmm. never been involved in a case that we were not called.
Right.
Never. But you had to ask yourself, why do they spend so much time discrediting any of us that come out there? Because they want to keep things the same way. Isn't it funny you've never heard a victim come forward and said, well, Rem Al made us give, and we've got millions of dollars from you. You never heard none of them say that. It's always your attackers and your haters. And I can't feel bad. They do it to the President of the United States. If they ask Obama for his birth certificate, they'll sure ask me for anything.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the main issues I feel like that has to be hurtful is when all of this happens, everyone has seen the video and felt like, well, you know, something has to happen because we see what they did was wrong. And then they are demonizing Eric Garner. And that has to really hurt because you're like, I know him. I know what he didn't do anything wrong in this case. Why are they making him out to be such a terrible person?
Because they have to make excuses for what they did.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to make it seem like he was a menace.
Like well, saw the video, though. So
yeah,
like...
but, you know, it's the prior history why mm-hmm. he was targeted that day. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't about what he did that day.
Mm-hmm.
It was what he did for the 5 years leading up to that day.
Right.
You know, he caused a lot of officers to be investigated through mm-hmm. IAB. He had officers transferred out of the 120.
Mm-hmm.
He would always make noise. They wanted him to shut up. They wanted him... You know, they would take his money and voucher it and then give him a hard time giving it back.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he was tired of that. You know, he was tired of them harassing him. If you notice, he said, it stops today.
Yeah.
Y'all are going to leave me alone one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And what hurts me the most is that 2 days before that, Like, we had just come home from a family reunion that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I have the picture in my phone that we took, the last picture of him alive 3 days before he was murdered. And he, it was like, they couldn't stop him, you know, because he knew the law. You know, he was one of them that would go in jail and sit in law library and learn every little, right. you know, every little detail. So he knew that New York State law allows a person to have two cartons on your person. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to have three cartons in your house, up to five in your house. So the reason he had the three packs could have been, hey, I smoke a lot. He could have said, I bought these for my wife. Right. You know, these are my wife's cigarettes. Right. They didn't see him make a sale. They just know the history.
Gotcha.
And they were so angry that he would pay the fine and get right back out there. Or he would do a little bit of time, a couple of days, and get right back out there. You know what I'm saying?
So but see, our position, and I've said this to the fan from day one, if he was dead wrong,
yeah,
you got to look at, go back to your point. We saw the video. It is against police procedure to use a chokehold.
To use that chokehold.
If
right.
he was dead wrong, the policeman used something against them. If he was dead wrong, he said 11 times, I can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the right to keep using a chokehold wrong, let a man beg for his life and you still do it, and then leave him laying there in the gutter. So I, as I've always felt from day one with this, that we don't have to prove anything about him, because you don't sentence a guy to death. If he was selling cigarettes, if he was wrong and all that, you sentence him to death. You use something that's illegal to chokehold him.
Right.
You let him lay there. I mean, what are we talking about? Yeah, and that is exactly why we questioned the grand jury. What he just said, we saw the tape. Well, what did they see to say the cop did nothing wrong?
Right.
They saw the same tape we did. Mm-hmm. What happened in the grand jury?
Another thing
that
I
wanted to know, what don't you see that I see, because
right.
I see
and
what
the whole
they
world
did.
Sees.
Another thing that concerns me is the young man that filmed everything.
Order.
Right, Order. Now he's upset and he's been thrown in jail and targeted and had all these charges brought against him. Does that mean that it's scary for somebody to film?
It's two people, though. It's not. It was two people.
I appreciate everything that Ramsey Order has done, but with him being in the life, you know, In the spotlight, as I should say, like me, mm-hmm. I can't go out and cuss somebody out and mm-hmm. slap somebody because I'll be splashed across the news screen
right.
tomorrow.
Right.
So he should be more mindful of what he's doing, knowing that he's being watched.
Right. But he should not be harassed. Mm-hmm. The catch 22 for us in talking about National Action Network is that if I helped him as I'm doing the family, they will then say that I'm trying to tamper with a witness.
Mm-hmm.
So I could not come near him. I would love to do a lot for him. But then the first thing they want, Red Mal was giving him something. That's why he testified a certain way.
Right.
So we had to keep our distance there to protect the case,
mm-hmm.
which is still pending with the federal Justice Department.
Now, do you still see those police officers? Do you still see those?
I don't live on Staten Island anymore.
You moved. Okay.
Yeah, they moved me like almost immediately, like 2 weeks after. I couldn't stay there no more.
No.
Who moved you? The city or?
Yeah.
Okay.
The city moved me, and I moved like 2 weeks. Like 2 weeks, I was gone. One, because I'm three blocks away from the precinct. My kids have asthma, so if anything happens, you call 911. Those would be the officers that would come to my rescue.
Mm. Right.
I was just telling the young man out front,
Wax.
Mm-hmm. That day before yesterday, I was on 125th Street, and you know the traffic was really slow.
Right.
And we passed by these two female African American officers, and they actually reached in the passenger side of the car and said to me, "Do you have your seatbelt on?" I had my seatbelt on. I just had it under instead of across my chest. But what gives you the right to reach in the car?
Right.
And you know, and then she sees my shirt because I had my husband's shirt on, you know, because the 1 year just passed. So right. I've been wearing the shirt. And she goes, "Oh, well, all officers aren't bad." And I looked at her and I said, "Well, I thought you were going to drag me out the car and choke me like mm-hmm. you did my husband."
And not only that, we just saw Sandra Bland.
And these were two female black
Sandra
officers.
Sandra Bland.
We just saw her.
And don't forget, it was two of the three cops that killed Sean Bell were black.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not that we deal with only white cops. We deal with police if they're wrong. Well, one of the things, and that's why I'm so happy that we have her on staff working with our other young people, because a lot of young people that want to get involved don't know what to do. We just started a new site on nationalactionnetwork.net that for just the youth called Shift Daily, for people that can write and people that want to express themselves, that want to speak for themselves. Because you got guys out there like me that's been out there for years, but let these young people speak for themselves. So we started a site so they can express themselves, talk for themselves, and lead their generation so that people that listen to you, which I understand is everybody on the service, can go to nationalactionnetwork.net and say, I can write, go to our Shift Daily, and the young folk run it. And that, she's committed her life, or sister, or brothers, to fight for justice, because the continuation of the struggle is what's important, because it's not getting better.
Have you seen it like this before, Reverend?
I mean, you come from the era
of Jim Crow and
but
all of
see,
that.
But see, no, I wouldn't come from Jim Crow.
I ain't that old.
But I can't, out the 80s and 90s, I've seen it as bad. The difference is, we didn't have technology, so now everybody sees it. And you didn't have the cell phones, you didn't have the video. But I've seen it bad, and we won by continuing the rally. And my people talk about what a marching get. Governor Cuomo wouldn't have had a special prosecutor now if there was not the Garner movement, the cameras on police. Now, these are incremental, but it's a step towards something. We've got to keep going, but I've seen it bad. But we put Abner Weimer's cops in jail because we stayed on it. There cannot be a movement without a goal, and it cannot be a movement without people being committed for the long haul. We got to stay on this. If they can choke a man to death on tape and beg for his life and walk away, then what are we saying? Ain't none of us what we claim we are.
Now, Emerald, now, like he said, social media is so big. How are you coping and dealing with it? Because, I mean, you might see memes today. People say some mean things sometimes on the social media stuff.
I mean, it's kind of hard when people tag you to that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I see it constantly. I'm nosy, so I read the comments. I read, you know, what people say. I read the Instagram, the Twitter. I read it. I don't respond because, you know, the best response is no response. My job is to make sure that people know who my father was as a person. Right. You know somebody by the type of children they raised. So I know my mother's looking at me because, you know, I tell her all the time, mind your social media, whatever, you know,
she
mind what you say.
Yes,
she like, wanna jump through the computer.
She wants to jump through the computer. Right. So, you know, because, it's important for people to know. Like,
it's funny, when I did MSNBC with Rev, you know, I don't wear my hair out.
He watches it every night.
I don't wear my hair out. I don't wear makeup and stuff like that. So my daughter goes, Ma, you going on MSNBC? Let them do your makeup. Let them do your hair. So I'm like, all right. So, you know, I have the long flowing curls and everything. So the first mean comment that I saw was, wow, she looked really homely when we first saw her, but now she has this long, luxurious weave. And I just laughed because, like, my mother's Jewish and my dad is Native American. My hair's down my back naturally. I do not have a weave. Mm-hmm. But that's the first thing that people think when they see a black girl with long hair. It's got to be a weave.
Right. She went, you know, bundles.
Yeah.
So she went and got them Remy bundles.
Got them bundles.
I don't feel bad. You see how he talks about my hair, but we won't get into that.
Yeah, so, you know, my kids always tell me, Ma, I don't respond. But I can't sit there and not say nothing. But like the Rev said, the Rev always saying, you know, I always say I have two personalities. I'm Esau. Like, right now, I'm Esau. But you can catch Pinky. You know, you can catch Pinky.
Pinky come out any given time.
Any given time. So the other day, Rev kind of got a little shooken up. So when everybody cooled off, he looked at me and said, they done bring the Pinky out of me.
Now, let me ask you something.
Did you give her any perm tips at all?
See, I told you he got on his head. You know,
I don't need a perm.
I'm trying to be Reverend Al, MSNBC, Dash Action Network. But I go back to Brownsville with you and me if we can do this. You know, I come off Saratoga. You want to go there? We can talk about it.
Now, let me ask you guys something. Now, I get this a lot. People would tweet me and email me and say they've suffered some injustice. This happened. How do I get that attention to the, how do I get that media attention
to bring up some injustice? 6070 and Emerald will pick up the phone and transfer them to the crisis manager.
Right. Because people always say, this happened to me, I need to bring, or this happened to my friend, and I need
to make sure. But that's why they call that, that's why you have organizations that do that, that know how to deal with media, that vet these things out. That's what we do.
Right.
And we know we're going to get flack for it. I mean, you're never going to be popular, but I grew up in the movement, and I was trained by guys guys that do that that have now I've been able to build Nash Action Network. That's how you do that. There's a lot of injustices. Mm-hmm. That's why we want people to be able to go to the sites. And there's a lot of young people out there that want to express themselves, and that's why we're pushing this. And that's why we like to have people like Emerald and them who have lived it, because right. they can feel it. They understand it because they've lived this.
Now the money, the $5.9 million, can you ever really enjoy that money?
I'm going to keep it 100. Yeah, I can enjoy it. Yeah. I'd rather had it and enjoyed it with him.
Right. You would give it you all up to bring him?
I would give it up in a heartbeat to have my husband back. We were married 28 years, and I'm not going to say it was perfect right. by a long shot, but he was perfect for me, and I was perfect for him.
There you go.
What made you accept the money after turning it down initially?
That's another misconception. I never knew nothing about the money. I was in PA.
Pennsylvania.
They called me in PA and said, "So you turned down?" I'm like, "Turned down what?"
Right.
You know, I never turned it down. I never even heard about it. Mm. When I came back, it was 5.9.
Was that his mother that had something to do with the settlement?
I can't even speak on it. I can't speak on that. That's, you know, a whole nother issue. I can't even speak on that. But as far as I'm concerned, I never refused it.
Right.
My thing was, it's not about the money for me.
Of course.
It's about getting justice.
Right.
Like, you know, everybody said, "Oh, you should have held out for more money." No. I want to get the money off the table. I want to let them know that my focus is getting justice. Yeah, it's a little money. Yeah, it'll make my life a little easier. It'll make my kids' life easier. You know what I'm saying? But it was easy enough with me and my husband raising right. my six children
right.
and my three grandchildren that now I have to answer questions. Where's Pop Pop?
Where's Pop Pop?
You know, where's Grandpa? My granddaughter's three. And, you know, it's cute when she says, "No justice, no peace." And she sees Rev and she says, "Justice, Grandma, justice," because she calls him Justice. So, you know, it's cute, but it's also a shame that a three-year-old knows, "Throw your hands up, don't right. shoot. Hold your hands up, yeah, don't right. shoot. Rest in peace, Grandpa," you know?
No, it's good. Like, you know, I have a 11-year-old son, and when he's seen the video, I mean, it's good and it's bad. It's good because he gets to see
what the world is,
what
really,
the world
like.
Is really like. You know, he's not living in this shell where nothing can happen. But it's sad because it makes him fearful of police officers. It makes him fearful to go out. But I was going to ask you, is now do you have family members coming out the woodwork because they get this settlement?
I'm going to tell you one right now. I'm sitting in my lawyer's office, right? Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, my husband had, there's four boys.
Right.
Okay? Three of them, unfortunately, are now gone. Mm-hmm. You know, his brother was killed 18 years ago upstate. Another brother was killed in Newark last October, well, the October before last. And my lawyer goes, "Esau." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Does Eric have a brother named such and such?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, I said, "But he's locked up. Like, you know, he's been locked up in and out all our marriage. I've right. seen him maybe three times." Mm-hmm. He had the nerve to call my lawyer, call him and say that he wanted to be included on the wrongful death of his brother, Eric Garner.
Wow.
And I laughed, you know, because I put it on social media the other day. If you wasn't on my bus at the beginning of this journey, you will not be on my bus at the end. This bus is express. It don't make no stops. It don't accept transfers.
There you go.
None of that. So if you wasn't with me from July 17th till now, see you when I see you, homie.
Absolutely.
It's funny because now
and I saw not Pinky, not Pinky.
Not Pinky. Yeah, not Pinky. Now I work at NAN, so people call and they'll say, "Oh, you know," because I use an alias at NAN, so they don't be like, "Oh, you're Emerald Garner." So I'll be like, you know, "Hey," you know, they're like, "So how do we get in contact with the Garner family?" So I was like, what is the nature of your call?" "Oh, because I'm a cousin and I need to get in contact." I said, so who are you? How are you related?" "Oh, I'm so-and-so's brother's cousin." That's, I said, "Well,
crazy.
I'm his daughter.
That is ridiculous.
And I've never met
and
you
I've
a day in my life."
"Yes,
oh, well,
crazy.
I'm your aunt because of this, this, that, and the other." I said, "Well, I don't know you.
What about the one-year-old daughter they say is out there now?
Okay. DNA is confirmed.
DNA is confirmed.
She's my sister.
His daughter. But like I said, from the beginning, my husband denied it, okay? And I will believe my husband over a hood rat any day, okay? So my loyalty was to him.
We ain't
going to
retrial
to
that.
DNA is confirmed.
But DNA is confirmed.
And again, we are dealing with ordinary, regular people who don't ask to be victims.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And people can make judgments all they want. this man should not be dead.
I agree.
And he should not be at the hands of police.
Bottom line.
And that's the bottom line.
Now, Reverend Al, let me just ask you a question. Donald Trump. This man throws shots, books, kettlebells, anything he could possibly throw at you, he throws at you. What did you do to Donald Trump?
Well, you know, years ago, Donald Trump and I clashed over the Central Park jogger case.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. When they arrested and charged those young guys, one of the grandmothers of one of the kids that they had to let go, Briscoe was his name, had called us. And we went in. And Donald Trump was the one that bought the full-page ads calling the Wolf Packs. And we marched on him. And I don't think he ever got over that. Since then, we've been all right, not all right. I used to see him at Tyson fights. I've been to his office back and forth. But every time he'd get a shot, he would. Since he's been talking about President Obama, I've been like all in on my TV show and Nan and all of that. So he's very thin-skinned. He's like a bully. He cannot take a punch. He can talk about everybody, but when you attack him, he just loses it. You see what he's doing to other Republicans. He got up and gave out one of his cell phone,
right?
So I think that he's thin-skinned. And me knowing that, I just keep going at him because, I learned as a kid, if you keep stroking a bully, he's going to beat himself. You don't even have to fight. And right. That's what's happening with John.
I love what you said. I saw what you said. You said he's an Apollo Akin Lincoln Center.
Yeah, he's trying.
Can you elaborate on that?
An amateur knight. James Brown was like my father.
Absolutely.
And James Brown told me the first time I went to Vegas with him, I was about 19 or 20. He said, there's a difference between a lounge act and somebody play the main room. I said, what you mean? He said, in the lounge, you got to compete with people drinking, the bar, the barmaids, the gambling. He said, in the main room, people are sitting there eating dinner. They bring their wives. So you got to have choreography, a rehearsed show, polished. He said, you do whatever you got to do in the lounge to get attention. You're competing with so much other stuff. He said, Reverend, when you do your lounge act to get to the main room, he said, do what you got to do. But when you get on the main stage, you got to really be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Donald Trump doesn't understand. You run for president now. You're not cutting a real estate deal on the West Side. He's bringing an unpolished act to center stage run for president. When I ran for president, I had to talk policy. What was I going to do about the war in Iraq? What was I going to do about health care? He's up here talking about other people taking shots. Why would you be running for president attacking me? It shows that you don't know what you are dealing with, which is why the same poll that says he's number one at 24%, 62% of those people said, but I don't know if I can vote for him for president, because they can't imagine him really running the free world.
Yeah, he's entertaining, but we don't want him to run for president.
Right. He's saying what I want to say, getting it off his chest, but I really don't want him in charge.
Right. Yeah. Because that makes me nervous, man. He's like, I see so many people that are for him. I'm like,
that's too much.
You know? Right. You dig down in that poll, 62% said they wouldn't vote for him for president. But the good news is he's distracting from the other guys. He has destroyed them. The other problem he's got is, I don't know how he comes back into business. He's lost his media contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Soon, he's not going to be able to keep his name up on building. He's killing his own brand.
Right.
I like that analogy. He's like a reality TV star who's trying to be on a sitcom now. Are these dudes who funny on Instagram, but when you put them on stage to do a real stand-up show, they can't make you laugh?
You see why I was watching Uncommon Sensitive?
There we go.
I love that. I'm going to use that. I'm going to be like a Baptist preacher. I'll give you credit the first time. Second time is
fine. You also said, too, you said that Donald Trump is wasting people's time. But you said when you ran for president, you knew you wasn't going to win. But you wanted to further a cause.
You run for two reasons, to win or for a cause. I wanted to make sure that things like criminal justice, things like why were y'all cutting things like summer jobs and youth programs, things that a president needs to deal with on the other side of America, was in those debates. And I think what shocked them is, you got to remember, I ran against John Kerry, who was now the Secretary of State. I ran against Lieberman. I ran against the governor of Florida. People never thought I'd get on that stage and debate and keep up with them, and in many cases win the debate. But I knew the cause would be hurt if I got up there and embarrassed everybody.
Right.
And Donald Trump, rather than rise to the occasion, has lowered the standard. And I think that if you're sincere about a cause, you understand that you've got to do what you got to do, even if it makes me uncomfortable. I liked acting the way I acted. But if I'm going to be about the cause, if I'm going to help the gardeners, I got to be able to present their case in a way that can get results, not just air my anger.
What do you anticipate happening now?
The first debate starts in August
6th. I mean, moving forward with this case.
Justice Department. We marched on Saturday. We are in front of the Justice Department asking them to prosecute like they did in the Louima case and the Rodney King case. And we're continuing to ask for a federal special prosecutor nationally as a new law.
And what can the average person do to make sure this prosecution happens?
The average person can go to nationalactionnetwork.net, mm-hmm. deal with our petitions, come to the rallies. The Garner family's been there every Saturday, 145th and Lenox at 9 o'clock. And we're just going to keep rallying. We're going to keep the pressure on. Why? Because we've done it before. When people talk about, I got a different way, tell them, show me where it's got results. I can show you where we helped
now,
the police prosecute.
Now, how can people donate? Because I'm sure that you,
well,
I mean,
they don't need to donate to National Action Network.
Action Network. How
no,
can they
well, they can go to nationalactionnetwork.net for that. But the foundation that Emerald has started for the family mm-hmm. and their work, let her do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a foundation. We're up and running. We'll have our 501c3 within, I think, 2 weeks or three
okay.
weeks. So the foundation is basically focusing on scholarships for young people, because my brother got a scholarship, but his scholarship didn't cover food, it didn't cover transportation to come back home, and it didn't cover clothes. He's 6'6", so, you know, he wears size 15, he got big feet. Oh, he's 6'8", and he got big feet. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of other young kids out there that need help. I'm a single parent, so of course I'm going to help the single mothers out there, you know, different type of programs. I did mothering programs, you know, while I was pregnant with my daughter and after my daughter, so maybe I could you know, partner with them. It's called the Nurse Family Partnership. And I just want to help the community, because we are the next leaders of the free world. Like, we're going to, my daughter's 3 and she's going to grow up. She's going to see what's going on. She's going to be afraid of the police. You know, my cousins, they're like, you know, they're young. So I want to teach them that not all police are bad, but it's certain things that you do and that you don't do. You know, sometimes they ask why I got to do this or why I got to do that. But right. I'm going to tell you why you have to do it, why you have to pull your pants up, why you have to take your hat off when you walk into a building. You know, little things like that, that little kids need to know growing up. And
absolutely.
Stuff that my father taught me is what I want to bring to the foundation.
Don't forget about your mother.
I mean, you know, I got you too, but you know, you're a celebrity on your own.
I was the backbone. People don't care about us,
you know?
I did everything.
Tell them, Pinky.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it real. I did everything. You know, but
for moms who think they down, you know, I'm going to help out.
Like I tell people, you know, it starts at home. You know what I'm saying? It starts at home. When your child is 2 and, you know, that's the no, you stop them from saying no the first time, and then you don't have to worry about them saying it for the rest of their life. My kids know when I call their name, they answer me yes. No huh, no what. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's a certain level of respect. And look, now, you know, I used to say, oh, wait till your father get home. I don't have that option anymore. Mm-hmm. So now it's me raising 2 boys, one's 15, one's 20. He thinks he's grown. The 15-year-old think, you know, they're 6'6 and 6'8. So I'm looking at them, and I'm like, I'm not going to chase you. I'm not going to do nothing. I'll wait till you go to sleep and get a hammer and bust you in your ass.
I'll get a table.
That's crazy.
You know, I'll get
crazy.
A hammer. When we moved from Staten Island to, man, I cannot find my hammers. They hid them. I had one on top of the refrigerator, one by the couch, and one by the bed. Okay, and they hit all 3 of them. I have no hammers in my house right now.
You going to invest some of that money, right? We don't want to see y'all 2 years from now and y'all done blew all the money.
Well, I like to shop. So my biggest thing would be shopping, you know.
Emerald, you got to hold it down.
I am the CFO, CEO, everything of the foundation. She's just going to go and talk to people. That's going to be her job.
Right. Right.
She's not going to be in control of the finances
of the
foundation.
I ain't in the money thing at all.
It would be good once people get these settlements, though, to have financial advisors
help,
and plans.
Right.
But no,
that's
we always tell them.
I have people calling me, want to be my financial advisor.
You don't need no random person.
How can you advise me on something that you have not done?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how you can sell me out to spend $100,000 when you ain't never seen $100,000?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So my thing is, I just want to be comfortable, you know, and be able, because I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life.
Right.
I'm 48, and I never knew the difference between being alone and being lonely, and now I do.
Gotcha.
you know.
And Reverend Al, you know, I have one other question for you, Reverend Al. 10-10. October 10th.
Minister Farrakhan, 20-year anniversary of the Million Man March.
Are you a part of that march?
Our organization has been to the meetings, and I spoke at the first one and the 10th one, and I'm supposed to be in Cuba that weekend. You know, we've had a long-standing trip, but we're trying to work it out, but we definitely support it. We support the 40-day march of the NAACP. We all support anything that's about justice, we support, and they support us.
Do you think we need a voice in the presidential race this year? Like how you said that somebody just to come in and speak about the issues that we're facing right now?
I think we need a voice and or we need to put the pressure on those running for president. What people don't understand is that we are about a year and a half away from life without President Obama. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us may have wanted to see him to do more, but he certainly turned it around where they started dealing with some of our stuff. We don't know what's going to happen after him.
Yeah. Lord
and
have
the
mercy.
Next president put another right wing on the Supreme Court, we could lose voting rights, we could lose the health care, all of this stuff. So we've got to really press now, which is why a lot of us are on the ground organizing for real.
And can I say one thing? All the guys, like you know, I got so much support after my husband passed, mm-hmm. you know. And I see all the guys, you know, that I knew, you know, that's on the block, you know. And I tell them, even though you're on the block, vote. You know what I'm saying? Your vote is important. And if enough of you vote, maybe Dan Donovan wouldn't be the congressman of Staten Island right now. Mm-hmm. You know, if they just come out and vote. It takes 5 minutes. To just go put your vote in, get your ID, go put your vote in, and help us move along because we're being killed and they think it's okay to pay us.
Right.
Give them some money, they'll shut up. I'm not going to shut up. Nah. I don't care how much money I get. I'm going to keep on running my mouth until I can't run it no more, until there's justice for me, Trayvon Martin, Ramali Graham, Mike Brown, mm-hmm. all these young guys that were taken unarmed and not a menace.
Well, thank you, Issa Garner, Emma Garner, Reverend.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Appreciate you guys, man.
All right.
It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.